I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast weekly show. For the recap of the French weekend, Lenny Martinez and Groupama FDJ doing the triple, as well as a fair bit of news, especially dropping today. UnoX disbanding their development team. Patrick Lefebvre's, or maybe it wasn't Lefebvre's, apology. The National Cycling League on hold for 2024. Rider schedule replacements like Laporte replacing Van Aert in the Giro, as well as some big transfer news. Demi Vollering apparently going to a certain French team, as well as previews of the Tour of the Alps GC and Flèche Wallonne men and women's, which is on Wednesday. So lot to talk about, Benji. This episode is brought to you by Joint Cycling. As always, did you catch the Tour de Doubs and the Jura races?
Well, I caught up with the Tour de Doubs and the Frenchy races. I haven't caught up with stage one of the Tour of the Alps, but you have, so you'll be the expert on that regard today. But I really found it intriguing to see, I don't know, for the last week, I've been in this French vibe. When it comes to Amstel, I was hyping up the likes of Grégoire, Lapeyre, all before the race started, Vauquelin, what can he do there? And then the week before, we had all those French races like Tour du Douen and the other one that Gaududin won. Like, seeing Lenny Martinez win after that transfer rumor slash news maybe towards Bahrain existing was interesting. Seeing Gaudu come third there, seeing Victor Lancelotti, or Monegasque, is that a word?
Monegasque, yeah. I need to ask Antoine Berlin about him. Because this guy's too good to be on. He should be on a world tour team. Lancelotti. So he...
Is it because he's not French?
I don't know if he's like, yeah, how Monegasque is he? Can we get... is he Prince Ranier or Prince Albert? Can we get him, if we start a Pro-Conti team, Monegasque Pro-Conti team with Lancelotti leading it, Benji, we get the Prince to fund it. It's always an idea. But Lancelotti, apparently he was addicted to FIFA a few years ago. Not joking. And he was addicted to FIFA. And he like would barely train, wake up, play FIFA. And now the guy's cranking out huge climbing performances. His best sort of time range seems to be 10 minutes. But I'll be interested to see what happens to him. It was the three races were classic Grand Bessin sans Doubs, Tour de Jura Cycliste, and Tour de Doubs from Friday through Sunday, 3 1.1s. If you're uncharitable, you would say these are the mid-season Mallorcan races so that French teams can get a points boost. If you looked at the other side of the coin, you would say, well, these races get more of a crowd each day than the Wollongong World Championships in Australia. So maybe France and Italy and Spain and Belgium deserve to have more races because they're better supported. Maybe both things are true. But yeah, Lenny won the first one. He went from the bottom against Lancelotti. Gaudu won the second one ahead of Jordan Gigat, who's a good rider on Total. And Lenny then won again ahead of Clément Berthet. The third one, pretty much every single one was the same race, just like a 10-minute uphill finish, to be honest. Did Felix Gold disappoint you?
Oh, probably. I would have expected to have seen him more this season in general already by now, because Decathlon's flying. Like, that team is flying. And he's like the one rider that hasn't flown this year, if that makes sense. Maybe we'll come once those big mountain stage races arrive, but I feel like there's been a few where I didn't necessarily see Felix Gall perform as I expected him to perform. But it's also, he then drops in the descent before the final climb and has to catch up and loses energy through that. And then in a time trial, he loses 17 decades. So he has those weaknesses that are severely hitting him, which I just want to see Felix Gall on mountain smash again.
He's got the wrong schedule the last, especially this year, right? Like Paris-Nice, there wasn't a serious climb in the whole race.
Should have been Tirreno.
And then GP Indurain, Basque Country. Basque Country, he wasn't that good, but also it's punchy climbs. I know he was solid last year, but He won the Queen stage of the tour last year on a 1 hour climb to Col de la Loz.
Yeah.
And he's in Tour de Suisse, he won on a longer climb or longer stage ahead of Evenepoel. He put 1 minute into him with an 18K solo. So I'm a little bit surprised that they're not sending him to races where the climbs are longer. I don't think the 5 to 10 minute efforts are his best, notwithstanding that he still wasn't that good in the weekend. But that's the French races. Lenny, he's a winner, keeps winning, and Groupama FDJ will take three across the weekend. What's this other news, Ben? What's this fracture talk? I heard Dr. Brunel said a fracture is not all fractures are created equally, but what on Twitter to you, but what did Alaphilippe say in an interview with Le Parisien?
So in Le Parisien, it first said that he had a fracture in the fibula. Then some other newspaper said it was in the knee. But then what I concluded out of all the mixed rumors was that it was in the top part of the fibula that is in the knee, which is why the confusion was probably made. But it's a fracture that he had been riding with since Strade Bianche, because he crashed pretty hard there to get away Asgreen early on in the race. So he's been not talking about that injury since then. He's been riding races with that injury since then. Now, first of all, let's talk about the doctor at the team situation. If a doctor concludes that Alaphilippe can decide whether he rides or not, I have no issue with that. I'm going to expect that doctor to have the expertise to be able to have that opinion. On the other side, Alaphilippe is clearly regretting racing those races. So I have the feeling of like, okay, what led Alaphilippe to deciding to keep racing on this to the point that he's now skipping the likes of Amstel, skipping some hill classics after a couple classics where he wasn't able to perform as much as he hoped, but also we were kind of hoping he would come back to his old self, but it was kind of unlikely, let's be honest about that. Now, what could potentially get him to say, I'm going to keep on racing to try and get the results either way? There's two potential answers there. Advocate of the devil against Alaphilippe, you've got the kind of feeling of Alaphilippe might have thought, okay, last year at Quickstep, contract year, I got to get results. And if I don't ride right now, that will reduce my value on the market at the end of the year. I might potentially be able to get a result here or there or something that might increase that value. That's side one of the story. But I also believe the other side of the story to be influential in some sense or form, because you got to keep in mind the Quickstep team culture. I'd call it the Lefebvre team culture. I don't know how he handles his team internally, but externally, he's pretty vocal about his riders when they don't perform. But what he was expressly vocal about was 2022 when it comes to Alaphilippe. And for me, that was the year where he's got so many injuries. He fell in Strade. He, after that, also was hit by his team car, Ibrahim Ansapel. Before that, had bronchitis at Milano Sanremo. At LBL, he crashed, broke his ribs and his shoulder, scapula.
Yeah.
And then he tried to return at the Tour de France, wasn't selected, but did Tour de Wallonie instead, where he had COVID, so had to leave Tour de Wallonie. And then he had to go towards the Vuelta to help Remco, where he helped Remco quite well in the first week and a half until he crashed out with, if I recall, dislocated shoulder. So this man had been injured it feels like 9 months that year. Like every time he came back, something happened. Does that say he crashes too much, including this year? Probably it shows something in related to that. But the fact that Lefebvre then at the end of the year criticized Alaphilippe's behavior, well, poor performances in that year, to me, that's like, if I'm a rider and I get criticized when I'm injured 90% of the year on my performance, then I might be more inclined to say, okay, I'm going to ride with an injury, because if I don't ride because of the injury, it's not a valid excuse in the team anyway. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I get that for sure. I mean, wasn't there reports that Total Energy had offered him a contract already? So it's kind of strange what's happening with Alaphilippe. Like, maybe he's just not motivated by the money. He just really wanted to perform this year because he already had that contract in the books, or on the table.
Very possible.
I will say, to play advocate of the devil, he had a goodish sprint result in Torino, top 10, and then he came top 10 in San Remo after the crash.
Yep.
for Strade Bianche. And if you were going to be very cynical, you would say that after a disappointing classics campaign, he would then come out and say, well, actually, I had a bad campaign because I had an injury and I hit it. If you're going to be very cynical.
You could do that, but...
I'm not saying, I'm just saying, like, he's like, I didn't want to make excuses, so then I did the classics, didn't perform, and now I'm going to put that on the table as why I didn't perform.
It's a possible scenario, but in the Le Parisien article, he really comes forward and says, first of all, that he regrets riding, but second of all, that he didn't share the news about his injury because he was scared people in general, I don't know who he's pointing towards specifically, would roast him based on that. Is that within the team? Is that externally the press? Is that public social media? It could be either of the three. But hey, it's just unfortunate in total, I feel like.
Yeah, hopefully he can take the time to recover now and we can see him in full form in the Giro d'Italia. You know, he's got a big goal ahead of him. I really hope, and it'd be great to see Alaphilippe get healthy, get in good shape, and that stage one punchy stage, have him fighting Poggi for that Maglia Rosa. That's like a big, big goal and a big carrot, and I really hope he recovers from this because, yeah, obviously he does have the fracture in his knee. And he's crashed so much. Like, that Liège crash was so bad where Bardet helped him out of the ditch. But, hopefully he can come back. And there's also a World Championships and a home Olympics course that really, really suits a peak Alaphilippe. So there's lots for him left in this season. And I hope he comes back in good shape. And he probably won't be on Quickstep next year regardless, one would think. But before we move on to the UNOX news, a note on our Join Cycling partner Benji, there's a new sort of series that's been released on the Join Cycling YouTube channel with Thomas Dekker as he prepares for Unbound. Slightly depressing for me in the FTP test, which I think was a 20-minute one they did with Jim, who was there, the CEO and founder of Join. It was like, yeah, untrained by FTP's 350. I was like, what? Didn't say his weight, but still, it doesn't matter what weight you are. FTP, he's not untrained, but you know what I mean? Before a training program starting at 350, I was like, okay, what's it going to go to? I'd encourage you to go check out that video. That's the first in a series that'll be coming out on the Join Cycling YouTube channel about Thomas Dekker using the Join Cycling platform to prepare for Unbound in this summer. Have you picked a program, Benji? Have you got a program lined up? What workouts are you doing before our rendezvous in Andorra?
I just looked at the stamina plan. The stamina plan is the one I'm going for, the three-month plan, because I need to build that longer climbing effort. So I can't just go ahead and do the Fabio Jakobsen sprint plan because, man, I could clean Fabio Jakobsen in the town sprints already. But no, just kidding. But the stamina, that's what I'm working on. Endurance when it comes to climbing, longer riding in general, if that makes sense. And let's hope that gets me a bit stronger. Coming back from COVID, coming back from a week off the bike after my Paris-Roubaix challenge, I need to get back into it and I need to do it quickly.
You better, because I've been flying.
Mate, you're going to be flying away, that's for sure.
I just put the workout on the phone, and then if I'm watching cycling, I have to be on the trainer. And given that I have to watch a lot of cycling, it kind of works. But if you want to check out Join, you can get 30 days free trial through the link down below. Thanks to them for supporting our weekly show. This news came out today, Benji. UNOX released it. A very strange press release, I must say. The title of it, the lead of it, is UNOX main sponsor of the Norwegian Cup. I'm quoting now. For years, UNOX has been a significant contributor to Norwegian and Danish cycling. Yada, yada, yada. But anyway, earlier this winter, it was announced that UNOX Development Weekend, held since 2018, will be discontinued. But we, meaning UNOX, have now signed a three-year agreement with the Norwegian Cycling Federation. This is related to the Norwegian Road Cup races to compensate for the discontinuation of the UNOX Development Weekend, sustainable races, etc. And then at the bottom of the article, wasn't in the copy on social media, disbanding the development team, focus on junior riders. So as a significant part of the restructuring related to stuff, basically they're canning the U23 development team and they're going to focus on the junior teams in Norway and Denmark?
Well, first of all, yes, they've worked on the development of Norwegian and Danish cycling. I think we all agree on that side of things. If I had to guess why the development, disbanding, whatever your word is for that, is happening, first of all, they say it in the press release, focusing on junior riders. I don't think that the trend is necessarily that a lot of riders are jumping from junior straight to World Tour. Some are doing it, but it's not everyone. I think they're still going to U23 teams, and even the Norwegian ones, and some Danish riders. They're not going to the UnoX Def team. For example, Per Strandhagen is. Johannes Stonemitted went to the Jumbo Def team as well. And maybe they've got this feeling of like the feeling that BMC Def team had back in the day. They had a different feeling. Their riders were leaving to World Tour teams that were not BMC. But here, UnoX is just not getting the talent that they hope to get to bring their World Tour team that top level rider. It's weird.
That's a strange thing, right? Because as you said, like Nordhagen was on these junior teams and then went to Visma Dev. And what they're canning is the Dev team. But it's like, well, you didn't get him on the Dev team. And it's what, Sivakov, and that's why BMC shut it down, was because they kept losing guys off the Dev team. And so I'm trying to look at who was on the Dev team that might have got poached. Yeah, okay, so Foss went to Jumbo.
Mm-hmm.
Visma, as they were called then. Leknesund went to DSM. Marcus Hulgaard went to Trek, even though he was like a million years old. They should have, at the time.
They also, I think at least one of those riders definitely was on the World Tour team for a year.
Yeah, Hulgaard was.
Hulgaard was, eh? Am I drunk?
I think.
Yeah, he was.
I think PCS is being strange to me.
Hulgaard was on the World Tour team on 2021 and then left after 1 year on the World Tour team.
Okay. But Jonas Fiederberg, he was even on the pro team for a year, I think. So
I'm like, super confused. Because in 2020, Hulgaard was set to be on the UnoX development team, which was a pro tour team. When was this pro dev team built again? It's so confusing.
I don't know. I think PCS is just bugging. But I can't, like, it's not like the Johannesson brothers got poached. Like, who got poached, really, from the dev team recently? Luke will know, but it's
You're right in saying that it's not like they're getting poached from the U23 team. It's the fact that they were getting poached before. Well, they're not really getting poached because they never had it. They never had the rider. They were investing in the club teams, in the junior teams, the teams for the youth in Norway and so forth. Those riders never made it to their dev team. So the issue is the fact that Jumbo Visma Lisa Bike dev team is just more attractive to young riders.
Yeah, so that could be one answer, is that they're not able. What's the point in having a dev team when Nordhager and Per Strand go to Visma and Albert Philipsen go straight from juniors to Trek World Tour?
Yeah.
So what's the point in having the dev team? Now, I agree. If that does make sense, I agree. Now the tweet copy began with UnoX Mobility is now intensifying its focus on the men and the women's professional teams with the goals of having both teams at World Tour level from 26. But like, the men's team is not going to be World Tour in 2026.
Yeah. Impossible.
Like there's no point. Like Lotto and Israel are much, much better. And right now Tudor are much, much better.
Yeah.
And Q365 are coming. So really they should be focusing on trying to get the wild cards, which they're going to struggle for even in 25.
Fully agree. Wild cards being in those top X amount of teams in Pro Tour to get those wild cards should be the vision. But also in addition to that, the only way where they can get that UCI license is if another team is forced to sell their license because they're in trouble. That's the only possible scenario of them getting to World Tour in 2026, right?
Yeah, unless Tobias Johannesson turns into Vingegaard or something like that.
Nah, but it's not enough, I think, at this point. He'd have to be super Vingegaard at this point.
Yeah, they're not scoring enough points. But I think that's not even, to me, that's not even their biggest problem, because to be honest, like, if you just get good for 1 year, you get the automatic wild cards. Being a yep. world tour is overrated anyway. The bigger problem, Benji, is that Albert Philipson didn't choose the team.
Yep.
And so that's more the existential crisis, is they are not getting the best. If you're going to be only picking Danes and Norwegians, then you have to get the best ones.
Yeah, but why would, for example, my name is Albert Philipson right now. Why the hell would I go to Norwegian plus Danish team pro team when I've got the ambitions of becoming one of the best riders in the world, when I can go to a world tour team, when I have a visible ladder I can climb within that team from dev team to world tour and be directly in world tour, whilst UNOX is struggling to be in world tour at the moment. So I think the age of using a pro team as your step up seems gone.
I mean, there's the language barrier component, but then he can speak Danish to Skjell Moser and Mads Pedersen, who will be his Danish buddies. So
yeah, but Scandinavian people can talk English, right?
Yeah, I know, but I can also speak English, and I would rather be on Jacob. What? I'd rather
on an Australian team. Yeah. It's also English.
Yeah, but I would rather be on them than EF.
Okay, I get that.
Or Quickstep, the language of Quickstep's English. So that's the benefit, is you can provide that cultural environment. But I it'd be interesting to see where it goes. Obviously, there's been a lot of changes. Tord Hushovd's now the general manager. There seems to be a big shake up there. And really, to me, they're trying to change a lot of things, not changing the goals. And frankly, the reality is, with their budget and with their signing restrictions,
yeah,
they're not gonna make it with just those two nationalities. And that's fine. If you want to just be the two nationalities, then you got to also accept that you're probably not going to be a world tour team. That's fine. Let's go to try and get the Tour de France wild cards. Okay, we probably should have done this with the Alaphilippe segment, Benji. Patrick Lefebvre's statement or Quickstep's statement? I'm not really sure exactly which. This came out on Quickstep's socials, right?
Well, actually, I don't think they promoted it on their socials at all. I feel like it came on the website itself, and they didn't really boost it with their socials, hoping that probably not everyone would see it, is how I feel about it. But basically, what it says, it's some kind of apology for what UCI has fined Patrick Lefebvre for. And initially, we thought that the fine was related to the Marion Rus thing, right? That's our initial thought. It was around the same time. But apparently it's in relation to two statements made in the past, one of which was in the Afspraak back in the day, which he made a relatively, I'd say, a misogynist statement on that show at that time. And then in addition to that, it was also the statement towards Bennett, where he compared his return to Bora as returning to a partner after domestic violence, which, let's be honest, it's a typical Lefebvre over-the-top statement that he shouldn't be saying, because that's fucking stupid.
Yeah, I didn't realize that either until this release, which, yeah, he didn't retweet himself. And it's titled on the website, on the Soudal Quickstep, no less, letterhead and website, Patrick Lefebvre statement. I want to be sure if he did retweet it or not. Can't see that he did. To quote, on Thursday, March 14th, I was informed by the UCI Ethics Commission that the UCI Ethics Commission decided that two statements I made were in violation of the UCI Ethical Code. The two were the ones Benji just mentioned. With this statement, I want to make clear that I accept the decision of the UCI Ethics Commission. I acknowledge that the sentences referred to can be perceived in a doubtful way. It was never my intention to harm anyone. Therefore, I apologize. I apologize to the UCI, the UCI Ethics Commission, to all persons concerned who have perceived these statements in a harmful way. The way our teams work should also offer proof that it was never my intention to offend or harm anybody. Today, we employ 74 riders and 106 full-time staff members, both men and women, in a diverse and inclusive work environment.
with no distinction in terms of origin, gender, or background. In this way, we'll continue our journey. Patrick Lefebvre. Now, what the UCI decision said, Benji, was that if there was an apology, he didn't have to pay the 20,000 Swiss franc fine from memory. So I think this qualifies as that. Now, what I think is, it's not my business, it's their team, but I'm sorry, if I'm the team, if I'm a sponsor or team sponsor, why the fuck are you using the team letterhead and the team website to release an apology in respect of Patrick Lefebvre's, essentially his actions? It should be him releasing it. And also, to be frank, he ain't drafted this. Like, he's not exactly come out and tweeted it. He has access to his Twitter and Instagram. I see him on there daily. So, yeah, it's kind of, to me, a little bit embarrassing, frankly, that the team is having to release this. And, yeah, what a mess.
Firstly, it feels like it's kind of the kind of apology of, like, sorry that you got offended kind of vibe is how I'm reading it. But in addition to that, yeah, it's difficult, right? Let's put it in a different setting outside of cycling for a second. There's a company and one of the executive managers puts a misogynist statement out in a TV show on TV. Does the company then apologize? I haven't seen that in the past, but I don't really care. I don't really care about this apology, man. Like, it's like,
no, he's not, the apology is the minimum done to avoid paying the 20,000 francs.
Yeah, he just didn't want to pay the fine. He doesn't care. Like, otherwise, he would have been pretty vocal about caring about, I'll make myself better in the future. I shouldn't say this shit anymore, stuff like that. But he's just trying to avoid the fine, and that's the story of this. And yeah, I think there's not much more to say outside of that. They were shit statements, and no consequences outside of the apology.
Yeah. This also came out about 2 hours ago, just before we started this episode. The National Cycling League is on hold for 2024. Now, if you don't remember, the National Cycling League sort of came out with some fanfare. It had some big high-profile investors from American sports, including noted top analyst Emmanuel Acho, aka Hot Take Merchant. Maybe we should copy his punditry style. But seriously, it had some big investors. And it was supposed to be, to quote from memory, revolutionizing cycling. And in the end, then when you saw the format, it was a crit league across three or four events in major cities like Miami, Atlanta, etc. And unfortunately for those participants who were contracted, I think, to those teams, the NCL announced today that it'll pause operations for the 24 season effective immediately as it looks to restructure and rebuild for the 25 season. That means no teams. And yeah, those riders are pretty, it's April 15th right now. Those riders are left up shit creek, to be honest. Yep. Maybe they found out earlier. It was supposed to be full co-ed teams. But yeah, the CEO said, for us to reach this goal in the market, we felt that pausing our 24 plans to adjust our business model will allow us to come back even stronger in the future. I've seen those statements before, Benji. We won't see it again.
I feel so as well. And maybe you have more of a knowledge on this than I do, but I feel like National Cycling League, from a European perspective, road cycling follower, it never lived for me. I never felt like it was a thing that existed that I could follow. I had no clue where I could follow it. I didn't know who was riding it. I don't know what was happening. Sorry, but it says it's on pause, but it never started for me.
Say like the Schwalbe crit, right? So the Schwalbe crit is not like the Singapore crit. The Schwalbe one before the TDU. That's not a fixed race. Like, that's really a competitive race.
Yeah.
Who cares? Like, who really watches that, right?
Yeah.
And that has World Tour, like, big sprinters in it.
Yeah.
There's you and Welsford and Bauhaus. You're right. Like, I'm not going to watch a Criterium. Yeah. I just am not. I don't even care if Pogacar's in it. I don't care. But that wasn't the... I don't think the business model was necessarily to
to make sure European audience was watching it. I think it was like to create a festival atmosphere across the weekend and have like stalls and stuff. But yeah, and it was like a scratch race, different points format. I mean, good on them for trying, I guess, but I don't think it was executed very well. And America has, I think, already multiple crit leagues. So I would love for someone to make, I know it's very, very difficult. I'd love for someone to make a go of a UCI stage race in North America.
Mate, I unironically had a dream a few nights ago. I'm not copying you from a few days
Legnesson
ago.
Legnesson beat you up, didn't he? No.
Legnesson didn't beat me up this time. I was dreaming about being present at the sidelines of a women's tour of Utah. Wasn't even the men's that came back. It was a women's tour of Utah. So did I dream that or did that actually happen?
I don't know.
Am I living a dream or?
Is there a tour of Utah anymore?
There was back in the day, but it died. I don't know. I don't think there's a women's one either. But I woke up and there wasn't a women's tour of Utah anymore. I was kind of sad.
Man. COVID killed these races. Like Tour of Utah ran from 2010 to 2019, and then COVID just bang. Like they tried to bring it back for 22. They couldn't. I mean, there has to be one of these. So like there has to be a tourism board or government, local or regional government or state government in America that is seeing what the TDU is doing and thinking that is worth it. Right? Yep. Because like the TDU, if you don't know, is owned by the South Australian Tourism Commission. Or the state, which is the state government, which guarantees it and makes it happen. Of course, they try to get a corporate sponsor, which they have. Arizona, Montana, I don't know. California, probably not because of road permits. There's got to be some places in the US that want some tourism, some active cycling tourism that can put on a five-day dot pro stage race to connect it to the Canadian Classics or the Baltimore, the Maryland Classic. There has to be a way to connect the two and make it also worthwhile. Then if you send those riders over, they can do a .2.pro stage race, maybe on the East Coast. I don't know. Some tourism board, think about it. Get back to us. But it's sad, yeah, because like, okay, it's not the Italy, France, Spain, but there are a lot of cycling fans in America as well.
Yeah.
Like it's our biggest market. Okay. Rider schedule changes, replacements. Christophe Laporte has been brought in for Van Aert for the Giro. So presume that bolsters Olav Koy's sprint lead out because without Van Aert, he was missing the last man. Cohen Bowman is in for Kelderman. Bowman won two stages with the help of Dumoulin back in 2022. Gerben Theissen is going to the Tour de France instead of the Giro because he broke his ankle, Benji?
Broke his ankle at Scheldeprijs. And also, Arne Marit also did as well. So two of the same team just broke it in the same race, which is really unfortunate for Anton Mache. But also, about Laporte Van Aert, very quickly, does that change Laporte's participation in the Tour de France is how I'm looking at it. Because then I'm thinking, will Van Aert ride the Tour de France instead of Laporte after Laporte did the Giro? Then again, because he rode three fucking Grand Tours last year, so maybe Visma's like, Laporte can do all three this year, but I don't actually mind Van Aert riding the Tour instead of Laporte.
I think the Tour team is still pretty up in the air, so really there's no decision on that for now, because the next line item on this is that Vingegaard is still in the Basque Country recovering. So, the Giro is set, but the Tour, I think, is still up in the air. And Jay Vine also coming out of that crash, he's back home in Andorra. He'll have to wear a neck brace for 6 weeks, but he didn't have to have surgery, which is good. Oscar Onley, unfortunately, broke his collarbone in Amstel yesterday. Did you say this is third one in like a year?
A year and a half, something like that. Last year broke it and broke it in January again and now in April.
And he was flying in Basque Country. He was really, really good on the Arate stage, the last stage. So he was... I would have been keen to see how he went in Flesh and Liège. That's a real, real shame. The winner on Wollongong this year in January. That's all we have for medical.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Cool. Transfers, though. This one actually really shocked me. And this was reported by... Do you know who Vollering's agent is?
I actually don't know.
Because who would report it? Ciro Scognamiglio?
This might be wrong, but I've got some vibe in my head that it might be her husband that's doing her management.
I think you're right. But anyway, it's not, it doesn't say on first cycling, which probably means it might be him. I was just saying it wasn't Carrera. Ciro says that sources confirmed to him now that a multiple year deal starting from 25 is almost in reach. So FDJ Suez is very likely to be her next team. I think if this is true, this has got to be one of the heists of the century for a French team. You're getting the best GC rider and the best Ardennes rider in her prime to come to your team. And you've got Evita Muzic. You've got good support for her.
I agree. I've been really confused about this transfer. We had the whole drama with SD Works, where SD Works brought out the really sketchy statement, passive aggressive towards Demi Vollering, that they gave her a good offer. And like, what is a good offer? A team will always say that their offer was good, because why the fuck would you say the opposite?
Do you reckon they offered her more than Capecchi?
Well, they should have, but it's impossible to guess that. Well, how I see it is the opposite, as in what a team might perceive as the good offer might not actually be the good offer that the market is throwing at right now. Because They also said in the same statement that the market is going crazy right now when it comes to salaries. If you have that opinion and you say how you had a good offer, that doesn't align for me. If you think the market is crazy and you think you had a good offer, then you probably gave under the market value, is how I read into that statement. Anyway, FDJ Suez, UAE was a rumor for 1 million at a certain point throughout the last few months. That is apparently not happening, is what the rumors are looking like. If FDJ Suez is her final destination or her current destination, would be great for cycling, I think, for women's cycling. We've got another team that might be on the steps next to SD Works, next to Little Trek, with Vollering, with proper support. Cavalli, Utreplodwig, we've got pretty strong riders in that team, in addition to the riders you mentioned, which are Muzic, Amber Krak, who has been phenomenal the last 2 weeks. Luz Arias, Tenso Fov, the team's strong. Let's get that out there. Strong, with Vollering on top of it, they are a team that will fight for the Tour de France Femme, definitely, because Vollering in herself can do that.
5 minutes. She went by 5 minutes every year. Minimum. If she doesn't win by 5 minutes, it doesn't count. Give it a second.
Someone else will come along. That's my take.
I would leave SD Works for less money. Fuck that. I don't even pull for her on the Tourmalet stage properly with Capecchi.
I had that take. Yeah, yesterday I recorded a Belgian podcast, and I made the very controversial statement on a Belgian podcast that Vollering is losing out by being on SD Works because Capecchi doesn't add as much to Vollering's palmarès as Vollering's present does to Capecchi's.
Facts.
I thought so too.
And how many times Vibas.
How many times did we see Capecchi ride for Vollering at the Tour de France Femme last year? Obviously,
Zero.
That's circumstantial because of the yellow jersey, but on stage one, they also choose Capecchi over Vollering, which Capecchi won the stage, so sure, good tactics.
Yeah, but Tourmalet, Capecchi rode fully for her GC. So it wasn't like the
that's also tactically a good decision for the team, though, right?
Why?
Getting both on the podium.
Yeah, sure, but if I'm Vollering, I'm like, when do I get the payback?
Yeah. Royster-Vollering is a good relationship, I feel like, though.
Yeah, Royster's different. Royster helped. She was the only one that chased Nuvia Diamond. But the look at no further than Amstel Gold Race. Now, would Vollering have beaten Voss in the sprint? No. But would she have had a chance to attack to win if Vibus wasn't in the group? If she was on another team? Yes. If that didn't work, would she have been good enough to come third and be on the podium? Yeah,
but also
the sprint's good enough.
It adds on to the fact that Longoborghini attacking on the third or second or whatever, Gauberg, if Vollering goes with her there, if she rides with her instead of
having Wibbs
and Kopecky behind, they collaborate. You've got that vibe going like we had in Brabantse. So, I don't know.
Balsera would leave for sure. The team pick Kopecky over her, that didn't make any sense to me. But I also don't know the internals, but.
It's great for women's cycling if Vollering goes to FDJ Suez.
For sure. Especially, that's why I'm surprised. It's to FDJ.
And you said especially. This article from AD in the Netherlands also mentions that Specialized could join as well for FDJ Suez. I saw another article or some tweet yesterday that Lapierre might be leaving Groupama FDJ or something. I don't remember where I saw that, though. So I'd like to source it right now, but I actually have no clue. So, Luke? Please find it.
Anyway, that's a really, probably the most interesting out-of-the-box transfer, because I was sort of like, oh, will UAE bring the cash, or I don't know. But FDJ, very, very, very interesting. Okay, time for some previews. We've got Tour of the Alps this week. Stage one was already today. Every stage is basically a descent finish, or there's no mountaintop finish. This race is determined to basically have the climb finish 20Ks from the finish, or basically a downhill every stage. Not my favorite race, I must say. I really like, and the start list this year is pretty poor. And that's my opinion on it. The first stage was, it had like a 5K 9% climb, 4K 9% climb, finish 20Ks from the finish, descent, and then a valley. Second stage is the same. Third stage is four steep climbs, 3Ks, 9%, back to back to back, and like a pure descent finish, so no valley. Stage four is got two 10K, 8%, 10K, 8.7% climbs in the middle of the stage, then another 5K, 7% before a descent finish. And then stage five is two reps of the Fresina climb, Passe Fresina, which is 12.5K, 6% before a descent finish. So. It's the competitors are Geraint Thomas, Foss for Ineos, Harper for Jayco, Chavito and Carthy for EF, Tiberi Pools for Bahrain, O'Connor and the PP brothers for Decathlon, Aja Desir, and that is the main guys. The best sprinter here is Filippo Ganna and Sergio Higuita.
But I think O'Connor wins GC.
He should. I think AG2R, I think they made a mistake today. So they took control on stage one. I think they were going for the Aurelien Paris-Pantre sprint. And I think the idea was for Valentin, his brother, to pace the last climb quite hard. And they controlled the break with Bice before. But the pace wasn't good, mainly because Ganna was in the group. And I know he climbs well. Okay, I accept it. But I'm sorry, it's a 5K 9% climb. And the group was 50 deep. The pace wasn't good. I think in hindsight, O'Connor should have probably attacked and then APP marked moves behind. In the end, nothing happened. And just before the descent, Bardet attacked on the descent and wasn't creating a split. He wasn't creating a split. And then Tiberi rolled in front of him, got onto the back of the motorbike, and the motorbike sitting, I'm talking bumper in front of Tiberi, ripped the gap open and there was a split on the descent. Geraint Thomas was the MVP for Ineos today. Foss was slowing him down and Thomas went in front of him, bridged across, got in that group, slowed it down in the valley. It was a group of Tiberi, Bardet, Thomas, maybe Emmanuel, Gebregsgebir. And then Foss came back with O'Connor and Paris-Pantre
Ganna was on 30 seconds. Ineos and everyone started attacking each other in the valley. And Foss got away with Chris Harper, Chavez, and O'Connor, and won his first ever road stage. So Ineos played it really, really well. Like, Ineos played the Ganna card, and then Thomas made that split on the descent really, really, like, Thomas was outstanding. And then Foss did the business in the sprint. Yeah, winning his first, I believe, road stage outside of Norway road race. And first win for Ineos. He goes into the GC lead ahead of Harper and Chavez and 10 seconds ahead of O'Connor. Thomas, Juanpe, Tiberi, Emmanuel, Gabriel Gabir, Bardet, VPP, and Pools are on 13 seconds. And then the group of Ganna was on 40, is on 44 seconds in GC. Igita didn't make that group, and Aurelien Paripantra also was probably a bit worse than they expected. So, yeah. What's going to happen, Benji? Is O'Connor, now he's got to attack the Ineos guys.
Yeah, he has to. By the way, what will it take to get a fucking uphill finish in this fucking race, man? There's always descents in the Tour of the Alps. I want an uphill finish. An uphill finish makes me care. I can't do this.
Yeah.
Look at stage four. Beautiful parkour. If you finish it on the last climb.
Yeah, but so what these organizers are trying to do, Benji, you understand, right? They're trying to do a challenge. Their challenge is, how can we create a parkour where we have the shittest sprinter possible win a dot pro stage in a sprint? Basque Country won up them the other nearly, or who won, Lapera? But then you saw the top five of that, the sprint in the Basque Country, you're like, they ain't sprinters. They're trying to one up them. They're like, what is the shittest sprints? Because that's the thing, it's a mountainous race, so no sprinters go, and then you design a parkour which people don't attack, and then you just have sprints. I mean, the finish of today was good, but again, the motorbike, that was a disgrace, frankly. Like, race being decided by a motorbike, one of my least favorite things. And then you're gonna, you have sprints with no sprinters. But anyway, it's, they had an uphill finish back in like 2018, I think. But it's always been like this. I mean, they can't go too high because of the snow still. They can't really go above 1500 meters too easily. But when it was Giro del Trentino, when was that? I swear it used to cook then.
Tour of the Baby Alps is what they should call this race.
Dude, Giro del Trentino, stage four. They finished on Passo Pordoi. It was only a week later. Less than a week later.
Giro del Trentino was the real shit. Sorry, but Tour of the Alps will never reach the heights of Giro del Trentino for me.
Giro del Trentino 2012 had three mountaintop finishes. and a TT.
Mate, Pozzo versus Cunego.
Yeah.
Peak Italian cycling.
So, yeah, not my favorite, I got to say. I think you're right that O'Connor should win GC if he's in good shape before the Giro. But Ineos got two cards to play, but he really should try. But Thomas looks good.
Mate, cycling's really gone through a transition, right? Right now, we've got all these World Tour teams in the Tour of the Alps. Back in the day, World Tour teams were getting shat on by Pro Conti Colnago, by Pro Conti Acquae Saponi Betancourt, Andreone Giocattoli Rujano. Sorry, but that was the shit.
Yeah, but
one of those names might not have been clean.
Yeah, some of them boys are cooking. Special rules. Okay. Anyway, I'll still watch every stage. So I will, because Thomas looks in better shape. He actually looks in good shape. Yep. On Wednesday is Flèche Wallonne, both men and women's. The men's race is 198 kilometers. Apparently 10% less climbing than the year before. They do the Mer de Huy four times. It's 1.3Ks, 9.7%. Which I think is one extra rep. The start list has Benoit, who was in Goodin Brabants.
Where?
Buitrago, Vauquelin, Scaroni, Laurence, Carapaz Healy, Gregoire Gaudu, Peacock, Benoit Tullet, apparently, Schielmoser, Almeida, Ulisi, Ayuso, Hirschi, McNulty, Fisher, Black. It's pretty good.
And the favorite?
Who's the favorite? Peacock.
Dylan Turns.
Oh, is Dylan Turns the favorite? Okay.
Is he not? I think he is.
Who?
Dylan Turns.
A favorite for Flesh.
Yeah. Dylan Turns on Flesh is godlike.
I know he won it before, but Peacock.
He was always close.
Skelmos is actually the favorite in the bookies.
Skelmos could do well as well. It's between Skelmos, the Turns, and Pitcock if he can get into the position.
Why is Lenny not here?
I don't know. Who is Lenny?
He just won two uphill finishes. He's 2-3 minute watts per kilo. Like, has to be really, really good. He's got good little punch. It's not that hard before. It's still hard, but it's not like Liège before. It's only 200Ks. It's shocking to me that Lenny Martinez is not doing this race. And that's on the confirmed star list. So,
did Van Gils do well here last year? Eighth last year, meh.
Last year, the top 10 was Pogačar, who I said couldn't win. Schkelmoser, Landa, then a gap of 3 seconds to Woods. Woods won't take part because he's not in good enough shape. Ciccone, Victor Lefay, don't know what he's doing. Hasn't raced this year. Is there any news on that?
On Lefay?
He hasn't raced for Decathlon.
I'll look it up in the meanwhile.
Tej Benoot, who is good in Amstel, Van Gils, Bade, and Warren Barguil. I'm going to go with Skelmoser. I think Skelmoser wins. I think he is right to be the favorite, to be honest.
I'm going with Dylan Turns, and I have no blue news on Lafay.
I think Benoot is being underrated. Well, like Oscar
I don't
only
think so.
Oscar Onley's shorter than Benoot in the market, and Onley's got a broken collarbone.
I'm going to go as far as saying that if Visma goes to the Mur de Huy in the group, that I don't see them podiuming this race.
Benoot on the Kuitenberg was good.
Yeah, but Benoot on the Mur de Huy is something different.
I agree. He came 7th last year, and there's no Poggy.
It's not a podium.
So do you think? So you think there might be something to open up early?
Well,
why do no teams open up? You know, it is possible to open this race up early.
Well, do you remember the year where Remco was racing? Was it 2 years ago? I don't vividly remember. Actually, might have been last year or 2 years ago.
I swear, Vavaka did once.
It is 2022, I think, where he rode Flesh. He came 43rd and did that lead out into the bottom. Remco, remember? For Alaphilippe, he should have gone on an early Mur de Huy. I don't understand why Remco doesn't go to this race and attacks early. Mauri, you're right, Luke Krefte. Mauri van Sevenant was the one that ended up in the bush after attacking together with Urano or something, if my memory serves me right, early. But they tend to get caught on the Mur because if you come to the Mur with like 25 seconds, you have to be really fucking strong to still make it. So that's the fault behind it. But I think someone like Remco could win this from a Mur away from the finish.
Because it's not that easy a parkour. There are lots of hills. Like, and the 3 laps of the Mur before, I mean...
Yeah, but Shiraz was on this parkour in the past, no? Called the Shiraz? Like, 2016, let's take it.
They've taken that out, so it's easier. It's going to be... the women's race is even shorter, 143 kilometers long. They do 2 reps of the Mur.
Not
finishing
enough.
On it. Obviously, and the start list has Demi Vollering, of course, Niamh Fisher-Black. Probably Guy Riolini on the provisional for Little Trek. Claire Steeles is back for Movistar. Yep. She fractured 2 vertebrae in the UAE tour, so she's come back rather quickly, actually, which is good to see. Sarah Giganti for AG Insurance. Should we always be considered on a watts per kilo test?
Yes.
Yara Kastelein. I have a feeling she was in the breakaway in here 1 year or... No, she just straight up came 10th last year. Mavi Garcia was good last year. Lippert is not doing it. She hasn't raced this year because she hurt herself running. Multiple riders, by the way, have missed so many. Didn't Matt Dinham, I heard, he hurt himself running.
Really?
In the off season.
What can I say? Never run.
Yeah, if you're a cyclist, it doesn't seem to be worth the risk. Vollering won by 5 seconds, though, last year. She doesn't look in the same dominant shape. You got to remember that was off the back of winning.
Mm-hmm.
What did she win? Amstel by 8 seconds the Sunday before. Who have you got for this?
I think, I don't know. I swear Longoburgini has gotten closer than the result she had last year at this race. Sixth in 2022. In 2021, she had third, so a podium. And I think that's the year with Van der Breggen and Van Vleuten fighting each other on there. She got fifth the year before in 2020. 2019, she got... Well, we won't talk about 2019. So I think Longoburgini will win in the form that she's currently at. But I hope for the sakes of LBL that Vollering is really close. So that we really have a battle on the slopes of Mudahui. Nivyadoma, I fear for it.
Like Nivyadoma, this should be her race because it's like a pure whopper kilo test puncher effort. Really should be her race. And they usually have a very, very good team for this because I think is Shabby going to be doing it? Yeah, Shabby's doing it. She's really, really good in this race as well as... Now, there's so many multicolored purple teams, I guess he works. As well as Balanfine, super strong. Niedermeyer, super strong. And Paladin as well is really, really good in the Ardennes. She just came 10th in Amstel and 9th in Liège last year. So they got a crack team. Do they need to go early then? They got... Don't just do a lead out for Cashier with Paladin and all those riders. Should they be attacking with them?
Well, if I recall, 2 years ago we had the group with Chapman, who was still at FDJ, that got ahead, or did Chapman ride after a group that was ahead? Don't know. One of the two situations happened, but there was a group that was actually considered somewhat dangerous in that race. So I think early moves in women's flesh can actually be not only useful to potentially make it to the line, but also useful to make it harder for everybody behind. And make it more of an attrition race than just a Mudahui watt per kilo test. That makes sense?
Yeah. I don't know what they're going to do. I think that what I said is, it sounds great in theory until you have Brody Chapman just chasing you. Yeah. And you don't go anywhere.
Reality is that there's so many teams that will just be willing to chase for no reason at all in this race.
Yeah, and it's not that hard before. I'm going to pick. Who am I going to pick, Benji?
I've got Longo.
Go Longo Borghini.
Come on, go for Kasia. You got to do it for the vibes.
I'm going for Yara Kastelein.
Okay.
She's Dutch, no?
Is Yara Kastelein Dutch? She probably is. Yeah. Fuck. But she's on a Belgian team, so she's half Belgian.
Phoenix de Koenig, by the way, Benji, they have more Dutch riders than Belgians by a long way.
Yes, but every single one of them is half Belgian, so that counters the amount of actual Dutch nationalities in the team by quite a bit.
I think that's how it works. Has she improved by 16 seconds against Vollering on the Mur? Probably not, but I'll go for it anyway. I think it's a shame not to see Puck Pieterse and Femme Van Empel here. Yep. I think as well, like if there's any race that suits two explosive, lightweight talents, it would be this. But anyway, that's we'll be watching that on Wednesday, and we'll have recaps as well. That's all, Benji, unless any news has dropped during the episode.
I don't see anything, so I sure hope that we've got a relaxed evening for ourselves without too much cycling news on this Monday on which we are recording it. So I'm actually really in the Ardennes vibe. I'm looking forward to the Flèche Wallonne race, the last 5 kilometers, that is most likely. I'm looking forward to LBL quite a bit, even though I'm very fearing of the men's LBL because it could just be bogey stomping people, but that's going to be previewed later in the week, right?
Has he ever won LBL before?
Bro, get out of here. Get the fuck out of here.
He's won like a million races. I can't remember them all.
Has he won the tour before, this Pogacar kid?
Yes.
No fucking shit.
That was the sprint where he came from behind and after Dale Lilly.
Yeah.
And Bala led it out for 450 meters.
Justice for Hirschi.
I mean, Hirschi won. In 2020, Hirschi would have won. Like, there's no doubt. Hirschi low-key cooking. Like, Hirschi, I think. I want to see his time versus 2020. But
there's no fucking way that the team of UAE will lead him out and put him in position at the foot of Flesh.
Yeah, they will.
Ayuso will try for himself. Almeida will try and do something.
Almeida not doing nothing.
He ain't positioning a Hirschi either.
Finn will do it.
Sure.
He will. I mean, who else they got? Novak. Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, I think they should go for Hirschi. He's looking really, really good, and he's won it before. Obviously, that was on DSM in 2020. That's all from us. Hope you enjoyed the weekly show. We'll see you with those Flesh recaps. Until then, ciao.